The Napoleonic Era, Napoleon in Exile, 1815 to 1821. Napoleon's Welcome to England. Napoleon was not concerned with the English newspapers' ravings that Las Casas had read. English newspapers had always attacked him, and it was expected. It would be foolish to equate the newspaper reports and equate them with what the British government might be discussing and deciding about him. The government had announced nothing respecting its position or its intentions. Witness Maitland's statement that he had received no orders that clarified these points. The government must be waiting to hear Napoleon out before determining how to treat with him. And Downing Street, the Prime Minister's residence, should receive at any moment the copy of his letter to the Prince Regent. All would yet be well, possibly. Napoleon could point out more obvious signs that show that he would be well received. Already, though it was still early morning, boatloads of people were swarming out from the shore towards the HMS Bellerophon, drawn there by the knowledge that Napoleon was on board. For these Devon folk, it was the greatest day in the history of Torbay, well, at least since William of Orange had first set foot in England at Brixham in 1648. Every sort of craft that could be pulled by oars or propelled by sail was requisitioned and packed to capacity. They approached as close as the Bellerophon's sentries permitted, and the passengers chanted, "Bonaparte! Bonaparte!" Of course, Napoleon did not ignore their shouts. He appeared on the deck often and showed himself at the gangways and stern windows, taking off his hat and bowing to the people in the boats. At the sight of him, the crowd was moved to further demonstrations. Men removed their hats. Women waved handkerchiefs and shawls in saluting and shouting, "Hooray!" Napoleon inspected the crowd through his pocket glass, frequently saying, quote, "What charming girls," end of quote, or, quote, "What beautiful women," end of quote. So we know what he's looking for. "What curious people these English are," he remarked to Captain Maitland. Beyond question, Napoleon was pleased by the growing display of interest that they had for him. Members of his suite began to relax their concerns for their fate. Montholon wrote, quote, "The spectacle on the water revived our hopes that the national feelings would open the gates of England for our reception, or at least force the ministers to allow us to proceed to America." While the boats were clustering around the HMS Bellerophon, that noon, Andrew Mott, that's Maitland's first lieutenant, arrived in Plymouth and presented his captain's dispatches to Admiral Keith. The tall 70-year-old Admiral of the Channel Fleet read them through with a stern, unmoving look. When he finished, he dictated a reply to the dispatches. "Sir, the officer of the ship you command has just delivered to me your letter of this date, reporting your arrival at Torbay with the Bellerophon and the Myrmidon, having on board Napoleon Bonaparte and his suite. I have also received your other letter, explaining the circumstances under which you were placed when you were induced to receive Napoleon on board, and I shall transmit the same to the Lords Commissioners of the Admiralty, in confident expectation that His Majesty's government will fully approve your conduct." Well, and then he wrote another letter to Maitland. Now, Keith had not missed the apprehensive tone of Maitland's letter of July the 18th. Admiral Keith was not a man who let his rank prevent him from displaying a personal interest in the concerns of the men under his command. A long life in the Navy had exposed him too intimately and at times too dramatically to them for him to ignore their existence or to belittle their importance. So the other letter went, quote, "I take the opportunity of your officers to return to congratulate you and the nation and to thank you for the perfect manner in which you have entered into my views on the subject and for the management of the blockade, about which I was most anxious. I will not be long ere you are instructed by the government. The first express will arrive about 4 o'clock this morning, and I attempt to telegraph a message, but it is cloudy. I beg you will send for anything you want to me, and it shall be sent instantly. I beg to present myself my respects to Napoleon, and if I can render him any civility, I will consider it my duty, as well as in gratitude for Captain Elphinstone's report of the attention he received from him on the battlefield. Now, before we go any further at this time, it's really necessary that we, you know, go back and see what in the world is going on in the, you know, the headquarters of England. What are the what is going on behind the scenes? And there is a lot going on behind the scenes. Literally taking the information that they have, viewing it as to how it works with the allies that they have. And then when Napoleon's letter arrives, they're actually going to analyze that word by word in justification. They really are not going to allow him, never intended to allow him to go to America. The discussion about possibly putting him in England is a possibility. But for the most part, everybody's going to end up wanting to put him on the island of St. Helena, just as the other allies did. It certainly beats any of the other opportunities that might have presented itself. But if you remember the message that Admiral Keith sent back about his relative who was wounded at Waterloo, and Napoleon made sure that he was treated very well and therefore survived, is a big deal. It will come back to help out a little bit later on. So we're now going to get to the point where we've sailed across the water. Everybody's there in England, and now it's time for the bureaucrats to figure out what is going to take place. So this, I don't know if this is going to be real extensive, but we want to look at it very carefully. Now, the sources for the material today is, of course, the 50 Days of Napoleon in England by Duhamel, Napoleon After Waterloo by Thornton, and Napoleon St. Helena by Martineau. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, SummaHistorica.com or HistoryAccordingToBob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out the CDs, check out the souvenirs, and if you like what we're doing and like to keep us going, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.